Hi, I'm Gary from Stonyfield, the organic yogurt company. Ever wonder what the USDA certified organic label on your food stands for? Or what the difference is between organic and all natural? You might be surprised. Visit stonyfield.com to understand what organic means and why it's really worth it. We're proud to be making organic yogurt and honored to support living on Earth, and hope you will too. Donate at loe.org.
Now to Copenhagen, Denmark, one of the bike capitals of the world, to update a story we did back in 2009. Living on Earth's Eileen Belinsky rode around the Danish capital with Marie Kastrup, project manager for the city's bicycle secretariat.
There are 217 miles of bike tracks in Copenhagen, plus 25 miles of tree-lined cycle routes that crisscross in the city center. They're reserved only for bikes and pedestrians, and there are plans for even more.
In Copenhagen, investing in cycling is not just for the bicycles, it's to make a better city. And in the city center, we just have too much congestion if we want to have cars for everyone. So the bicycle is a very space-economic mode of transport.
And people in Copenhagen who choose pedal power are an enthusiastic bunch.
It's economical. It's best for our little economy. So we just use the bike.
It's easier to get around. Also, it costs a lot of money to take the bus. Then it's for free and easy.
It's freedom. You can get anywhere you want in a very short amount of time. And you get exercise and you get fresh air and all the good environmental stuff as well.
In Copenhagen's harbor is a statue of the city's icon. It's Hans Christian Andersen's Little Mermaid. But now, the city's bicycle project manager, Marie Kastrup, says Copenhagen has a new symbol.
The bicycle girl is this cultural icon in Denmark. It sort of represents this healthy, authentic, happy, active woman, which is a symbol of Denmark. This freedom that you can have on a bicycle, and also sort of a healthy, democratic feeling that everyone is free to go on the bicycle and do whatever they want.
And what Copenhagen wants is to have half its residents commuting by bicycle in 5 years.
That was Living on Earth's Eileen Belinsky. 3 years ago when we aired that story, 37% of Copenhagen commuters regularly rode bikes. The goal was to up that to 50% by 2014. To see how the Danes are doing, we're checking in with Michael Koval Andersen. He's CEO of Copenhagenize Consulting, which promotes bicycling. He's also known as Denmark's bicycle ambassador. Ambassador Michael, welcome to Living on Earth.
Thanks very much.
So what does the term Copenhagenize mean?
Well, it seems to mean the way that other cities can be inspired by what Copenhagen has done to promote the bicyclist transport. So what we've done here is being exported to many cities in the world now. So Copenhagenizing is really a way of describing what is possible for other cities based on the Copenhagen experience.
Back in 2009, when our reporter was in Copenhagen, 37% of the city residents were commuting by bicycle. So the goal then was to have 50% by 2015. And where are you now?
Unfortunately, we're at 35% now. So it's going in the wrong direction. There seems to be a little bit of lack of political will to take it to the next level here.
Well, hold it. Why is it going down? And how is politics playing to that?
The level we're at now, or have been for many years, has been rather stable. And we have completed in many ways the infrastructure for bicycles in this city with our separated bicycle lanes, cycle tracks, if you like. The next step really is taking even more space away from cars. We just don't have any municipal politicians at the moment who are willing to sort of take that big step. The other thing, unfortunately, that's happened here, the Road Safety Council started promoting bicycle helmets for the first time 3 years ago. And since then, the same thing has happened here that has happened everywhere in the world. The number of cyclists is falling. You know, we're heading in the wrong direction. We should be promoting cycling positively and reclaiming the streets, as it were, and making them sort of more human streets, more livable streets.
Well, hold it. You're saying that the requirement that people wear helmets has led to a decrease in bicyclists?
Yeah, there's no requirement. There's very few places in the world where there's a mandatory helmet laws, but the simple promotion of them, suggesting that people wear them, we've seen this in every region of the world where helmets have been promoted, that cycling levels fall. In the countries that have legislated them, Australia and New Zealand back in the 90s, they had a fall of 30 to 40% in the number of cyclists, and they're struggling to get back to pre-law levels. It really sort of is a bullet in the back of the head of any healthy bicycle culture.
Boy, that's not what we learn here.
No, I don't. But we do have a different tradition, really, in Europe of promoting cycling instead of promoting helmets. Even the high levels of the European Union government, you know, they've published studies saying do not promote helmets because it makes cycling look more dangerous than it is. And all the studies that show that cycling levels fall when you promote helmets is working in the wrong direction. So we want more people on bicycles.
Boy, I'm going to safely predict something, and that is that we're going to get a lot of angry listeners responding to this.
It's a whole different tradition that you have over there. And it's really a question of marketing. Every city in the United States and around the world had a lot of bicycles on the urban landscape for decades and decades. What happened really was the advent of car culture, when urban planning started to focus on the automobile first instead of the other forms of transport. And the bicycle really was sort of pushed off the streets.
I can come up with an alternative hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
In 2009, you had 37% of your population biking regularly, and now you have 35%. When I was there in Copenhagen, I noticed that you had bicycle traffic jams. And the other thing you lacked were bicycle racks. There would be bicycles stacked on top of each other. Could that be a part of the reason that people are kind of turning away from bikes, perhaps?
These are issues, but I don't think that's a reason that you'd lose 2%. The places that I go in the course of a day, I don't have a problem parking my bike. If you leave it outside one of the train stations, sure. You see the chaos of parking outside some of the train stations, but I don't think lack of parking at train stations would knock off 2%. Traffic jams, there are some streets which are heavily congested on bicycles, but we're improving that here in the city of Copenhagen. We're putting in green waves for cyclists on five main arteries now. So if you ride your bicycle 20 kilometers per hour, you'll hit green lights all the way to the city center. This actually has increased cycling on many routes. So we're tackling the issues of bicycle congestion and bicycle rush hour and parking, but it's still not going in the right direction.
I know that Copenhagen had two goals: to make cyclists feel safer in traffic and reduce the number of seriously injured cyclists by half. So
even the city of Copenhagen's bicycle office will say the same thing, that this is about infrastructure. If you want to reduce injuries and death, you make it safer for cyclists with better facilities for cyclists. You know, taming what we call the sacred bull in society's china shop, you know, the automobile, making it safer for people on bicycles and pedestrians and people taking public transport.
Yeah, I've been to Copenhagen. What you've got are a lot of clunkers, heavy-duty bikes that are very utility-designed.
Mm-hmm. It's not just Copenhagen. You really see all the main bicycle cities in Europe. It's practical bikes for regular citizens. Citizen cyclists is what I call them, to sort of separate them from the avid cyclists, if you like. And in all the emerging bicycle cities we're seeing now, Paris, Barcelona, Dublin, Seville, these cities, there was no bicycles in these cities 5 years ago. And now they're all doing amazing things to get people to ride bicycles. And the bikes that the people are riding there are just regular bikes for regular people.
So, Michael, I take it you don't wear spandex lycra shorts or a bike jersey?
No, only in my dark bedroom at night. No, I don't. No, I don't at all. I wear a suit if I'm going to a meeting on my bike. You know, you can see that every day here. We don't dress for our journey. We dress for our destination. We don't wear bus clothes when we take a bus, or we don't put on car clothes when we get into a car. So, yeah, it's the same on the bike. You're just a fast-moving pedestrian. You look the same as the people walking on the sidewalks.
A lot of cities, Boston, where I am, is among them. We have these, rental bikes that you can rent by the half hour or so. They're very popular.
Yeah. I think there's about 450 cities around the world with these bike share programs now, and it really transforms the urban landscape. It's really a great way to kickstart mainstream bicycle culture in a city. It's a simple urban planning question, you know. If you think bicycle first and you make it possible to go quick and easy on a bicycle, people will do it. That's why we ride here. When we ask the citizens of Copenhagen every couple of years what their main reason for riding a bike is, the majority, every single time, they say it's quick and easy, period. It's simply the quickest way for me to get around.
So your goal is still 50% of the citizenry riding cycles, and if so, by when?
Well, now it's 2025, last I heard from City Hall. So that was actually changed since you were here, because 50% is really at the moment unattainable with the current climate. You need politicians who will really just do something to take it to the next level.
So, Michael, instead of being a Denmark's bicycle ambassador as an honorary title, why don't you run for public office?
Oh, God, no. Bogged down in meetings and really bad coffee? No way.
I'll bet you they have exclusive bike racks.
Oh, they do. The city hall here. My God, it was from 1905, that building, and they have the most beautiful bike racks on the planet, indoors and with mahogany paneling. It's gorgeous, actually. But you know, that wouldn't be enough for me to want to run for office.
Well, Michael, thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you.
That's Michael Koval Andersen, Denmark's bicycle ambassador. Actually, according to Denmark's Council for Safe Traffic, one cyclist in three in Copenhagen wears a helmet. So, do you wear a bike helmet? Well, fortunately, the Living on Earth studios are right next to a bike path, and most of us commute to work by bike, and everyone wears a helmet. It's on this bike path that we did a little bit of an informal survey and spoke to people here about whether they wore helmets.
It's a lot safer. I got hit by a car the other day, and it was really helpful. So my head hit the pavement, at least my face did, and I think the helmet stopped worse injuries.
I wear a helmet every time I ride a bike because, well, my friend got into an accident and he wasn't wearing a helmet and now he has severe brain damage.
Most of the time I don't wear a helmet. I guess the reason is I mostly ride in conditions where I feel pretty safe.
Not exactly a representative sample, but according to the latest figures, half of Americans who ride bikes wear helmets most of the time. And Living on Earth's Ike Sriskandaraja is here with me now. And Ike, I know you wear a bike helmet all the time, right?
My mom made me, and I have since then.
Uh-huh. So she's not checking on you now, but...
it's on my head.
So we asked you to investigate, and people should wear bike helmets.
And it makes sense. I mean, if you think about a head-on collision, you want a little piece of plastic in between your soft skull and the hard road. But it's actually a lot more complicated than that. And this gets very polarized very quickly. Actually, people call it helmet wars.
So, bike helmets, are they all they're cracked up to be? A special report by Ike on his bike next week on Living on Earth.
See you then, Bruce.
Now, back to Cambridge, Massachusetts, where a crowd gathers at the finish line to see who came in first in the 3-mile rush hour race. Bicycle commuter, car driver, or public transit rider.
And for the moment you've all been waiting for, with a time of 20 minutes starting in Davis Square and ending in Kendall Square at Gensheim Center, we have our winner, Josh the Bicyclist.
It wasn't even close. The subway rider finished in second place in 29 minutes, and the car driver pulled in last, taking 32 minutes. Be sure to check out our website for a new feature we call Living on Earth Now. Daily updates, new stories, and features. You'll like the one about witches and climate change. That's LOE.org. Coming up, bubble, bubble, toil and trouble. What's brewing at LOE is sour and heady stuff. Stay tuned to Living on Earth.
Support for Living on Earth comes from the Grantham Foundation for the Protection of the Environment, supporting strategic communications and collaboration in solving the world's most pressing environmental problems. The Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation and Gilman Ordway for coverage of conservation and environmental change. This is Living on Earth on PRI, Public Radio International.